So I sneak on the set. We're in the background during the race scene. You can see me if you pause it. I'm like a little blurb, but you can see my Fila outfit.
So it was the night that we were shooting at Croshawn.
Hey, Anthony, where'd you get this podcasting stuff from?
It fell off the back of a truck. Here with Gino Caffarelli. Welcome to the show, Gino. It's a pleasure to have you.
Thank you so much, Anthony. Thank you, Sal.
Gino.
Did I say your last name right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, okay, good.
People
right.
Botch it up sometimes.
Caffarelli. All right, good.
Yeah, Caffarelli. Sometimes people say...
How do you botch Caffarelli?
Well, it's Saffarelli. I don't know.
Saffarelli?
Yeah, well, they...
There's no S.
It's phonetical.
I don't know.
Phonetical?
Phonetic.
Yeah. It's phonetic.
Yeah, I mean, some people would think, you know, Saffarelli, but I'm like, where did you get that from? Just like they would spell Gino with an E sometimes. I saw it on like...
With an E?
Yeah. An E.
See, that's my friend Gino Vento of Gino's
really?
Cheesesteaks is with an E, yeah.
I didn't know that.
But he's named after the restaurant, so I don't know.
Yeah. But, I mean, it's easier to pronounce Gino than it is my legal name, which I was born. It was my grandfather's name, which I'm very honored to have. Egidio.
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 That's your legal name?
That's my legal name.
With an E.
Very cool.
With an E, yeah. Egidio, which was my grandfather's name.
Very original. I mean, you don't
very,
see
yeah,
any
very so,
any of those running around.
Yeah, it's on my license. It's on my passport. That's my legal name. But in school, obviously, it was always an issue because back in the day when they would call out the roster of, like, you know, kids in school or attendance, they would always stop. And I knew that was me all the time. I would go like this. And they would
wow.
say, how do you pronounce your name? I go, Egidio. But they just call me Gino.
The Italian tradition of... those extremely complicated names. Yeah, I'm named after my grandfather. It's
beautiful.
It's a rich tradition. Yeah,
absolutely. That should never go away.
Yeah.
You gotta bring up how you know.
This actually kind of involves you, Sal. It kind of involves you, which is very funny. So, Gino.
Yes.
I know when we met not that long ago in like a person, I always saw your stuff, and I knew you probably a lot longer than you knew me. But you came out with a film called Franny Lou.
The short story that developed into the film.
Yeah.
Yes, it was a short story based on 1986. It was 87 still.
Yeah.
It was a short story that I had put online on YouTube.
Yeah. And
then it eventually had to kind of, you know, try to get it off the ground and became the movie Cruise. But yeah.
Yeah. I remember seeing the trailer. And I'm like, this looks great. I saw Catherine Arducci.
Yes.
She was in it, and like a couple other things. And like I said, it's just like my family. Like, you know, who's screaming at who with like the Italian style stuff. Then randomly, I'm hanging out with Ty. I've known Ty for a lot of years. So me and Ty
New
are
York
in the same
City,
fraternity.
By the way.
Yeah.
Little plug.
I'm hanging out with him, and he gets a phone call from this girl. And she goes, I'm in a film on Franny Lou. You guys should like come and like try to get in it. So Ty turns to me and goes, "You want to go be in a movie?" It's like 11 o'clock on like a Friday.
Now is this the now they call it a proof of concept, but back then I called it is this Franny Lou that's on YouTube or is it Cruise the Movie?
Cruise the Movie.
Okay, because the proof of concept, the short story that I directed, which became Cruise. Was 2012. So then when we shot Cruise, that was 2015. So
yeah,
so
definitely.
We're talking about 2015.
This is correct.
Okay. All right.
Was this the correct. Whitestone Lanes?
No. It wasn't.
Talk about that, Sal. We'll talk about that.
So next thing I do is he goes, just wear something Italian. So I only have a Fila top. I didn't have bottom. So I wore blue jeans and like a Fila. And I sneak onto the set. I'm like, I'm going to get in this guy's movie. Ty is completely not dressed. In any way. He's wearing shorts and a t-shirt, which makes no sense, but
he's
somehow
like
still snuck on. Yeah. He's somehow still.
I love that. I love that people were sneaking onto the set. I mean, that's you know.
Emily Ratajkowski was there, so I wanted to be there. Like, that was what I heard.
Yeah. Because she was just, you know, she was the video girl, and then she did a Gotten Girl, and she was kind of like on the up, and she only had a social media following at the time of like, I think a million. Now she's at what, 40? But. Yeah. Of course, beautiful girl, and you know, a lot of people had a crush on her or have a crush on her, so I can understand.
So College Anthony was like, I'm there.
College Anthony.
I'm there. I'm there 100%. So I sneak on the set. We're in the background during the race scene. You can see me if you pause it. I'm like a little blurb, but you can see my Fila outfit.
So it was the night that we were shooting at Croshawn.
Yep.
Right?
Yes.
And I'm trying
with
to
the,
think.
With what, the race scene when both the cars are...
Now, do you
together.
Remember? Do you remember what car it, they were racing? Because I know they raced a couple of cars. I'm trying to place the scene because he raced like I think two or three times.
It was under the underpass, the one that was off of Francis Lewis with the underpass.
Got it.
Yeah.
When he does a spin out.
Yes. Yes.
Got it.
It was that day.
Now I'm gonna go pause and like look. But I told you when I met you at I forgot what restaurant it was.
Mangia Bene.
Yeah, I was gonna throw a plug. Mangia Bene, right? And I said, you know. And then you told me that you snuck on the set. And I said, oh, I respect that.
Yeah.
But and you were there a night too at White Stone Lane,
I was.
Sal.
So there was a call for classic cars at White Stone Lanes. Tommy, big time Tommy.
Which again, and I tell this, and I love Tommy. When I was in Greece, I tried to reach out to Tommy because the director and I wanted to cast him in the film.
Yeah.
And it was for a specific role. I'm not going to
mention the role.
He's such a character. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was his, if you know, and I was in Greece and I was DMing him. And I don't know, just we didn't get in touch at the time. We were supposed to cast the role. But Tommy was supposed to be in the film, but then it already
Cruise.
Got casted. Yes. Yeah. Yes. The director said to me, do you know Tommy? Because I know
right.
he had
yeah.
the reality show Carfellas, right?
Yeah.
And he was starting to do his... and. We messaged back and forth, and then I guess there was a little time somewhere I couldn't get in touch with him.
Right.
I was in Greece, and he was working on something, and the director wanted him for the movie, so...
Right, so...
It's just the timing was not there, but I know you showed up with Tommy.
Because then Tommy stuff. Was like, well, you know, if you need cars, you know, we could show up. So I get told, we're going to White Stone Lanes. Bring your car. Make sure it's washed, waxed, okay? They're shooting for an 80s movie, so, you know, keep your Pioneer stuff at home, whatever. I was like, all right, cool. I had an 81 Mark VI. It was pale yellow with a yellow top, and it had...
Very authentic, very standout-ish.
At the time, it was hubcaps, white wall tires. It wasn't like spokes and vogues. It was very, like, original. So they said, great, we're going to put this car... in the front of the shot, the exterior shot for White Stone Lanes, which I was like, oh, that's so cool. Yeah, at the time, I didn't know that, albeit an honor, you're going to be there. Especially your car is going to be in a principal shot. You're going to be there for like 6-7 hours. Guarantee it. Now, we showed up. It was like one of these shots that started.
It had to be. It probably had to right. be one of the biggest like shots in the scene because what
Absolutely.
Was at least 100 kids on in the lot, right? More, right? It was.
You had like 150, 200 kids
right.
in the
scene itself.
And I call
them kids. I mean, you know, teenagers and stuff. Yeah, I mean.
Teenagers at White Stone Lanes, you know, all dressed up and everything.
Yeah, that was a big to-do, you know, again, especially if people don't really get the filmmaking process. That's like a big night going in, like work-wise. So
right.
there's a lot of moving parts.
So we all sit down. We all sit down at the bowling alley. Because after a couple hours, you know, we're all standing around. We got hungry. So we all sit down at the bowling alley. And we just start ordering stuff, right? We start ordering stuff. And hours tick by. Finally, we're like, we're going to go. We're gonna go.
When is it happening, right? Like,
right.
Yeah, right.
When is it happening? We're gonna go, right? Now it had to be. We held out pretty long, but you know, we were looking for a bill or a check or something, right? So we just go,
yeah,
it's with the production.
Yeah, it's with
one
the production.
Of these things.
But
I think
you specifically said it's on Gino Caffarelli.
Yeah.
I said, I got a bill? Like, dude, you know, I was like, and you left.
Yeah.
I was like, all right, he owes me a drink. And now I'm here. I'm having
no,
a glass
definitely
of wine, so
more
we're
than
even.
A, yeah. Definitely
we're
more
even.
Than a drink.
All right. I didn't want to go there, but okay. You, yeah,
we
yeah.
Had, so.
All right. So we're going to Rayo's one night.
Tommy, is that what you're telling me?
Well,
Tommy at the time was the president of the Cadillac Club of Long Island, which was a club dedicated to, you know, classic American boats. And eating food. So, you know, while we weren't driving around, We were sitting and eating.
No, I got it. Listen, I got a kick out of it. I read that. I got a kick out of it.
The you know what? The production
didn't even take care of it. I actually took care of it because I was like, I didn't want to, like, you know, piss off the other producers or whatever. I'm like, all right, I'll just take care of it.
We, honest to God, we looked for a craft services table.
Well, it definitely was there somewhere, craft services, but you guys ordered from the menu of the bowling alley, which, you know, wasn't part of the production, but it's okay. I got a kick out of it. Just like I got a kick that you snuck onto the set and that you put the bill on me while the production then I paid for. But it's all good. So it brought us full circle.
100%.
What is it like producing films in the neighborhoods that you grew up in and kind of doing casting calls and knowing that, you know, neighborhood people are going to show up? You know, how do you navigate all that? How do you explain, like, all that to kind of regular folks?
I'm pretty transparent when it comes to that. I said, you know, expect to kind of like stay, you know, an average of like 10 hours, 10 to 12 hours. It's like, you know, they call it the hurry up and wait game, especially for actors. When you show up on set, if they give you a call time at 6 a.m., you're probably not going to shoot until 10, 11. So it's kind of like they call it the hurry up and wait game. When we shot the proof of concept, Franny Lou, which became Cruise, we were looking for cars, and I had a minimal budget to shoot that proof of concept or short story, just to kind of tell my story. Because originally, I was going to shoot it and pitch it as a TV series, almost kind of like a poor man's Entourage of how I grew up in Queens.
Yeah.
And when I lived in L.A. for about 7 years, I was always told by people that I looked up to as producers and directors, they would always say, write what you know. So I started writing about what I knew. So cruising the boulevard in the 80s and going to Holy Cross and circling around the neighborhood, 30 years later, shooting something about the neighborhood, like not knowing back then that I knew I wanted to be a filmmaker as a kid and an actor, but when I was cruising around Franny Lou, I was dreaming of that, but who knew 30 years later you would circle back and actually film a film in your neighborhood. Now, most people, they go into different like cities to shoot films. At one point, it was brought up, well, maybe we could shoot it in other cities. And I loved the other cities that they were considering. But this is why I give props to Rob Siegel. He wanted Cruise to be shot in the neighborhood, and so did I. I mean, that's the authenticity of, like, shooting in the neighborhood. And I think we shot most of the scenes here on 11th Avenue, right here in Whitestone.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's definitely gratifying because I'm like, I grew up on these streets. It's more authentic. But explaining it to people, just prepare to, like, be there for 10 to 12 hours. And when I shot the proof of concept, Franny Lou, I was looking for cars, and I had a minimal budget. I had permits. We shot for, like, 2 days, which should have took, like, 6 days. And just kind of, like, did a post, like, looking for cars, and cars started showing up. I had to turn away cars. Even with Cruise, I had to turn away cars. There were so many cars showing up, you know, because it was, you know, people,
well, that that's nostalgia. That's how big a part of the culture it is.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. So, but it is a hurry up and wait business, you know. You kind of, you know, you show up and you wait and then you do your job and then you got to wait again and they got to move the camera. Even just like something like this, a setup, you got all the cameras and stuff. There's, you know, you got to change the battery and stuff. I mean, things take time. It's a process. So
yeah, 100%. Yeah.
But to circle back to the main question, how is it shooting in, you know, in the neighborhood you grew up in? I mean, I was thrilled. I was every day, like, I was skipping around the set and, like, was happy to just get my movie made.
Right. And to represent it to the world.
Right. And, you know, the thrill of that experience is that, you know, if you do something with passion and love, it's always going to be a win-win. So for me, every day going to work, again, every day you go to work should be a thrill to go to work and be happy that you're going to work. So to me, it seems like playland sometimes, which it is, but it's also, it's work, but it shouldn't feel like work, but you love what you do what you love type of scenario.
Was this always the calling growing up in Flushing?
Always.
Yeah?
Yeah. 33rd Avenue, yeah. That was the calling, yeah. I mean, my producing partner, Carmine Famigletti, Carmenucci, because, you know, we started in musical comedy and radio. And we
really?
Did an album. Yeah, he grew up the block down from me, and, like, he's my producing partner. But back then, we're actually approaching the 25th anniversary.
Wow.
Of the 12 Days of Guido Christmas. That's kind of like how we...
Wait, that was you?
Yeah.
You didn't know that?
No. Well, that was you?
It was me, Janutz, in the beginning of the song. Mm-hmm. That's my nickname. I like that you don't know that because it's a good surprise. That
no,
you
like
gave me a good surprise. Yes.
I watched that like 100 times when it came out.
Yeah, you're talking about one of the original viral videos, yeah. Viral hits.
That was
viral hits.
That was the original viral video.
Well, there was no video, but it was radio.
Yeah,
it traveled through. Again, that could be a whole different segment of like. But Carmine, who I grew up with on 33rd Avenue, we were filmmakers and wannabe actors when we were kids. But we kind of circled back around and did theater, and then we did musical comedy, and then we got signed by a record label, and we wound up doing this like musical album. And I respected when you said how you doing on America's Got Talent, because I feel that us as the they called us the How You Doing Boys after a while, because it was Joey Balls, Carmenucci, and Janutz, and we signed this album, and we wind up doing this song, converting this How You Doing song into a Yankee How You Doing song. And that's that viral, how you doing, Yankees, Yankees, how you doing? And the Guido Christmas was kind of like our break into like the industry. Again, like you said, it went viral before there was viral. We didn't have
right.
Yeah.
We didn't have iTunes. I think YouTube started in 2005. So that was 1998.
It was on Napster. They used to pirate it onto Napster.
Yeah.
You could listen to it on there.
Yeah. So that was 1998. So we're coming up on the 25th anniversary of Guido Christmas and the 25th anniversary the following year of conceptually like making How You Doing a product back then.
Yeah.
Right.
And then Budweiser did it, and it just kind of like, so we feel like we were the pioneers, which is great, but we wanted, you know, to make movies. And
did you go to school for it?
I took acting classes. Yeah. I'm a self-taught filmmaker. But acting classes, absolutely. I mean, my extensive background was sales. It's kind of like, you know, I went to college, got my degree. I did, you know, conform the Italian thing, you know, get your degree, you know, become a lawyer. It was always, you know,
lawyer, doctor.
It was lawyer, doctor. That was in the Italian household. I mean, first generation, my parents are from Italy. It's like lawyer, doctor. Yeah. Doctor.
Well, your parents, they're working so hard. They're like, well, he better become a lawyer or a doctor.
So
yeah.
I went.
Especially Catholic school, all that. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I went to St. Mel's. Then I went to Holy Cross, all boys school, and then St. John's.
Yeah.
So it was, I'll go to college. I'm like, oh, shit. I got into the pharmacy program at St. John's.
That's incredible.
That's a great program.
Well, when you're like street smart and then book smart and then you want to act as a kid and make movies, I was kind of, I'm like,
yeah.
Like, all right, well, I'm going to go to college. Mm-hmm. And I tried pharmacy for 2 years. Done. I was like, after the second year,
We had the same shelf life at St. John's.
2 years to pharmacy program.
I forgot you went to St. John's too, right,
Sal? 2 years.
Well, I did the pharmacy program for 2 years. And then I'm like, what am I going to do like with all these credits? I'm going to lose them. So I'm like, let me just go into business. I'm like, I'm a chiacchierone. I talk, I'm a salesman.
Yeah.
But I always would sell something of value and then sell a good product or a service. So I was like, I want to take a, you know, business and get a degree in management.
You went right into Tobin?
Well, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, I used to hang out at Marillac and then it was UC first Marillac. And I forgot what the hall was with the pharmacy program, but that was like, it was kind of like straight out of a movie. It was like all these like nerdy like people become pharmacists. And I'm like, look at me, I'm going to be a pharmacist. Like, no, nah, it ain't happening. No. So I took a business degree, and that was a 10-year plan. And then I just started, you know, going to school at night and working during the day. But it gave me the flexibility to start taking acting classes because mm-hmm. I was always like an outside account executive. So I finished my degree and, you know, wanted to make my parents happy. I got my degree, I think, the same time that my sister got her degree, which was like, my sister's way younger, like, but we graduated at the same time, but I didn't do the whole cap and gown thing. I just got my degree and, you know, worked in corporate America for a while, but my true passions were always, you know, in the creative world. But back then, you know, you can't, not that you can't, but like you're conforming, like, oh,
you really did your due diligence though. You went, you got a degree,
right.
You started working,
right.
And then you started taking acting classes.
Well, yeah, well, it gave me the flexibility to succeed in my corporate job and then have the flexibility to like do that. So like a lot of these companies, if you make your number And if you're doing your job and you make your number above and beyond, so let's say a quota is at 100%. If I came in at 200%, they're like, oh, we're going to leave this guy alone. Like, he's doing, but I was, you know, I was taking acting classes. I was started auditioning, you know, on the streets of Manhattan, going to this acting class. It gave me the flexibility. But then eventually you have to kind of like outweigh, well, eventually you got to jump into the deep end of the pool.
And so was it about that 10-year mark in this corporate job where you started branching out, you started doing the radio, you started... recording music.
Well, even when the musical comedy stuff came along, yeah. That was 1998, 99. Now, again, the internet was there, but it wasn't, you can't just, you know, start Googling like today, right? You can, but all that information wasn't really there. So, like, a lot of the people that I worked with in the corporate world, they were like, wait a second, were you on the radio today with the guys? Are you the one that did the Yankee song and that Christmas song? And I'm like, yeah. They're like, what are you doing here? I'm like, It's not that simple. It just like it's a step, right? Mm-hmm. Everyone thinks that if you're on the radio immediately or you do your first move, you're like, oh, you're set for life. But that's not the case.
I've spoken with Sal Governale. He's a producer for the Howard Stern.
And I know Sal's the stockbroker for years. And right. I love Sal. And we met years back, like almost like 20, 30 years ago.
And it was the same thing. He would still be going to work.
Yeah, he was.
And then like run into the bathroom, call into the Stern show. And do like a bit on the radio, making fun of.
I was juggling for a while, and then eventually, you know, it's kind of, you know, you got to kind of.
When do you decide to say I'm gonna jump with 2 feet?
Well, it's a great question. So my last corporate job, again, not to plug any, like I was in telecom a lot. I sold cars a lot, but I always sold cars that I believed in. Remember Saturn, the car company? They're not around
anymore. Yeah, of course.
So. That was my first.
Great little cars.
Yeah. Like I was.
The SL.
Who made Saturn?
You kick them and.
Dent
proof. They were dent proof.
It was Saturn was.
It was GM. It was
GM's answer to the Japanese car.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
They were made of fiberglass.
Only the side panels.
The side panels were made of fiberglass.
It was built like a Volvo. It was safe.
Very safe cars. Very reliable cars.
Yeah, reliable. It was the answer to the Japanese. Exactly. Our competition was Honda, Toyota.
Yeah.
And it was my first like real, that was like 92, 93. Like I'm.
When Saturns were good.
Yeah. When Saturn's, well, Saturn.
The SL2.
Yeah, the SL2.
Sorry.
You got so excited.
Holy shit, you're bringing me back right now because I was like on the showroom floor. I was always a closer, but I still think I hold a record of like the most Saturns in the country that I sold. I think it was like 38 in a month. But if you look at Saturn and you put like a unit next to it, I remember the GM when I first started, it's USA's turn. If you look at Saturn, you can make it into USA's turn. But obviously they're not around anymore. But that was my first corporate job. But it wasn't a corporate job because I wore a different color polo shirt. It was a different answer to the car buying experience. So it was one price, no negotiating. They already knocked down what they knocked down. But you went in for the customer service and the reliability of the car and stuff like that. But that was kind of like the genesis of like working in the sales world and then working in the telecom world. And then eventually, to answer your question, I think it was like 2006, I was with another telecom company, and it was a cush job. And I'll never forget, I had something in my office that I had on the wall, and it was a picture of Los Angeles and Hollywood, and like, just as an incentive, because I was like, you know, I want to go there one day. Like, I want to go to L.A. I want to just kind of experience it. I don't have to go there and want to be an actor or anything, because I was already kind of dabbling in it over here and doing it, balancing the corporate world.
And building a reputation.
Right. And kind of just like I really, you know, putting in the work and the schooling and taking classes. And then eventually I was like, you know what? I was in my office. I go, what am I doing? I go, another corporate job? I'm like, so 2006 was probably the last corporate-y oriented, real corporate-y company that I worked for.
So you had to quit.
I did quit. I was there for like 4 months. And they were like, what are you going to do? I'm like...
That's what I was going to say. Well, what does your boss say when you walk in? He says, I'm going to quit. What are you going to do? Well, where are you going?
All right, so if that's...
How can we keep you?
Yeah, so if that's 2006, again, there's no social media then either, right?
Right.
So Facebook starts in 2006, right?
Yeah.
I believe so, yeah.
I think there was MySpace, right? Was there MySpace at that time?
Sure.
It was first.
I think, yeah. So I'm like, I'm just, you know, kind of like, you know, I'm going to move to LA for a while and just get away from New York. I was like, I wanted to get out of New York.
What did you think of L.A.? Because I had the pleasure of going to L.A. with Sal. The first time I ever went was with Mo. And Sal and Mo were both two of my favorite clients, FYI. No, the first time I went, I feel like I had all these.
Pay him to say that.
Yeah, you,
I feel like I had.
I see the money come out of his pocket.
I feel like I had all these ideas and this picture in my head of what LA was and in Hollywood was. And then, like, you know, I don't know if I built it up to be this fantasy, but, like, you know, did you have that same kind of experience?
That's a great question, and I love that. It might be a lengthy answer, but I'm going to tell you. So in 2005, I got the opportunity at that time when I was, you know, taking the classes, auditioning. I had this manager I was freelancing with. It wasn't like a set thing. He starts sending me on, like, these, like, random auditions, and I would just, like, again, because auditions, the way I look at them, just know you're not going to get it. Just thinking you're not going to get it. Just go in and do your job and do your, because auditioning is your job also. It's doing work, right? It's like you go in, you're not going to get it, but.
Well, you're constantly auditioning. Yeah.
Right, constantly. But you're oiling the machine. You're working on your craft. So yeah. I would bounce around, and he sends me on an audition. It's a reality show. I'm not going to name it. It was on NBC. It was a big thing. And I'm like, oh, man, I don't know if I want to do it. And I go in on the audition, I'm myself, and I'm like joking around, and I'm like, and they really like me, and they call me in, and they want to book me for this like reality show on like NBC. It was a dating show, but it was a big one. And it was like the fourth installment of the dating show. And I'm like, you know what? Okay, I'm not married. I'm single. I'm in New York. I'm saying, you know what? It's a free trip to LA. I'm going to live in a house where all these guys I'm going to meet from all over the country. And I go to do this show, and it was one of the best experiences. It was my first time in LA. And as a kid, I'm picking up the Ross Reports, I'm picking up the Hollywood Reporter, I'm watching game shows, I'm watching Price is Right, Culver City, Burbank, I'm like, it's, you know, movies, Warner Brothers, you know, studios.
CBS.
Paramount. Like, I'm like, as a kid, you're like, oh, like, you look, it's like, it's bigger than life, right, as a kid. And I'm like, well, I'm going to get a free trip to LA, and I get to see LA a little bit, and then they put you in this house. And then the following year, I get this job, my last corporate job. And I'm like, I think it's time to just like, just go to LA and just like get my feet wet. And I was going to be like, I'm going to go out there and I'm going to be a star. So it's not like you didn't know anybody.
Just, over there,
yeah,
right?
I knew two people there. I just, two friends.
Yeah.
And I just went out.
Kind of have to.
Yeah. Just like knew two people.
Yeah.
So I leave a cush corporate job to go sleep on a couch in Santa Monica in 2006. Sleep on a couch. I was like, I'm saying to myself, but I didn't care about that. I was like, all right, to other people, be like, oh, that's sad. You got to sleep on a couch.
What were your parents saying?
I didn't tell them that I was sleeping on a couch.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Well, I wouldn't have told them either.
I'm like, Ma, Dad, I'm in Santa Monica. They filmed Three's Company here.
Yeah, so you lead with that.
Which my father would always like, he loved the Honeymooners, my dad. Oh. God rest his soul. My dad, he loved the Honeymooners and he loved Three's Company, but he would call the Honeymooners Ralph.
Ralph.
And he would call Three's Company Jack. And I'm like, oh, they filmed Three's Company in Santa Monica. Oh, they filmed a Jack there. I go, yeah. I'm like, yeah, I'm by the beach. And I was on the couch. I could hear the waves from the ocean. And I'm like, yeah, I am in Santa Monica. I could hear the water, but I was on a couch for 3 months. So I go from like this cush, like corporate job that I leave. Again, you jump in the deep end of the pool, you take a risk. Because sometimes risks do pay off and dreams do come true, right? I take a leap of faith, and I go out to LA with no expectations, and there I am in Santa Monica sleeping on a couch with, like, I think the kid was, like, 21 and like that had the apartment, and I'm like, all right, I'll do this for 3 months, and I worked, like, four jobs to just, like, you know, like, navigate, pay bills. I was, like, working as a telemarketer here. I was, like, bartending, like, on one, you know, one weekend here. I was, like, from, like, a corporate cush job to, like, doing, like, four, like, miscellaneous jobs. You know, I took that leap of faith. I really packed two bags, and I was like,
that.
I'm just going to go high. I packed two bags. I literally put money in my pocket.
You got to believe in yourself.
1,000%.
You got to believe it's right for you, too.
1,000%. My mother always says, well, can't you do what you, you know, when she said, why are you going to L.A.? I go, can't you do what you do there over here? I go, Mom, you don't understand. Like, I went to L.A. I stayed there for a little while, and then I met some people. They're like, oh, YouTube. And I'm like, YouTube was fairly new. It was like 3 years old. You know, I took a VHS reel. He digitized it. My boy Paul Gennaro, who was my roommate in West Hollywood, he digitizes the reel, puts it on YouTube. A month later, I think it was, I get a phone call from the director. I was like, oh, shit, I forgot. I put my cell number on that reel. It was my old reel. It was a VHS tape. And I get a phone call from Rob Siegel, who's casting a movie called Big Fan. And he says, you're not in New York? I go, no, I'm in L.A. He goes, well, I found your reel. I was like typing character actor, and I found your reel, and offered me the part. And I was like, all right, I'll come to New York. My parents are there, and I'll, you know, and I'll pay my own dime. I'll fly myself back. And that's how the whole relationship with Rob Siegel, you know, he did a movie called The Wrestler, and then we do
Great Crew. Movie. Like,
again, think about it. I don't move to L.A. The reel never goes up on YouTube. He doesn't find it. Cruz may never be Cruz. I'm never in that first movie that he directs, Big Fan. And now he's off to the races. He's an incredible writer. He did recently the Chippendale Show on Hulu. And he did Pam and Tommy. He's a great writer.
Quick, too, from Big Fan to Cruz. You know, the genesis from, you know, I want you in this movie, to I want you putting this movie together. I want you writing this movie. I want you directing this movie, you know?
Yeah, people get, you know, they go on a gut. If you have a good, you know, you have a good gut, you have, intuition, you're intuitive. You know, I feel more than ever, you know, intuition, go with your gut, is always going to, you know, guide you in the right spot.
I mean, how crazy is it that, you know, you went out to L.A. with just your bags?
Right, and just no expectations. I wasn't like, you know, I'm going to come here and you know, be somebody, and I'm going to, you know.
Right, chase the dream, right.
I was like,
only for the dream to bring you back to New York.
Right. That's exactly what happened. Then that was the most beautiful. I was like, wow, talk about circling back. I'm like, holy shit. Like, that was my, again, that was kind of like, you know, what direction do I go in? You know, I could never go to L.A. That whole, how do we relate that to? Like, It's a Wonderful Life. What movie can you relate that to? Like, Back to the Future? I don't know. Like, how do you, like, one thing changes, one little direction that you don't pick from, like, could change the rest the course of your life. So it did in a way, because it was therapeutic for me to finally go out to Los Angeles, because I always wanted to go out. But then it circled me back to come back to New York and work on the movie.
It's also right around the time your daughter's born.
Yeah. So
a lot going on in your life at once.
Yeah. My daughter was born in 2013. So I come back to New York to shoot my proof of concept for Annie Lou in 2012. And then a year later, you know, I'm, you know, pushing to try to get the movie, you know, the proof of concept turned into a film, and my daughter's born. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. It was a lot of moving parts those years.
Athena.
Yes. The goddess of wisdom.
Athena Visits the Marina.
Oh.
Available now. I mean, you know, the jump from actor, you know, to writer, director.
And I always use those terms like not you know, loosely, or like I don't like to do like actor, writer, producer, director. Like I'm a creative. Like that's, you know, in front of the camera, behind the camera. I've always been like that. You know, back in the day when you were juggling, you know, role, you know, certain things and wanted to learn everything about the business. So what is that guy doing? What is that guy doing? I was like, what is that guy doing? What is that guy doing? I'm like, I'm learning it. People are like, no, you got to concentrate on one thing. You got to master one thing. I didn't believe that. I didn't conform into thinking. I wanted to know what they did. Yeah, I know what the actor does. Yeah, he acts, and you got to take lessons. You got to hone your craft. So today it's the norm calling yourself a Renaissance man and a Renaissance woman, right? Mm-hmm. Back then I was doing that, but they were like, no, you got to concentrate on just one thing. But who's to say you have to concentrate on one thing?
Right.
Now,
you were genuinely curious. You were it was something that excited you.
Yeah.
It brought you in.
Without that guy, you can't do that. Like, so it is a collaborative process. So when they say act, you know, when people say actor, writer, producer, director, I'm like, you know, all those hats, I get it. I don't know if that's more of an ego thing for certain people, but I always say like active filmmaker or creative artist. You know, I don't like zone in on one thing. I was always wanting to learn all hats, because now, again, it's cool to say, oh, well, I'm a Renaissance man, I'm a Renaissance woman. I do this, and that. But that's what you need to do today. That's why I got to give you props on what you're doing here, Anthony.
Thank you. That really means a lot.
No, absolutely. 1,000%.
I followed your rise, so
no, it means a lot. 1,000%. That's the way to do it. Like, you know, get your hands into like and learn as much as you could and absorb as much as you could.
That's what it takes to be, you know, the captain, is to understand all of the goings on, every part of the filmmaking process.
Yeah.
You know, and I mean, it's it just goes to show that you have, you know, an unending curiosity for the craft.
Yeah, well, I'm going from TV to film to writing a children's book. I mean, it's 360, right? It's like, well, wait a second, I just saw you like play a bad guy, but you actually wrote a children's book too? I'm like, well, I mean, you know, I consider myself an artist, and I don't throw that that term around either. Author, like, I feel weird even saying that, but
you're an author. No, author.
You're an author.
I know, right? I know. Yeah, I know.
It's physically manifested.
Gino, I want you to take your right hand, reach over the your left shoulder. Yeah. And just a couple of times.
I'm really never been that guy to kind of give myself props. I always try to, you know, remain grounded.
Yeah, but you are that guy.
Well, for that, when I am that guy, I mean, my name is there, but I would say that's probably my most proudest work is that, because it's inspired by my kid. I mean, that's
absolutely,
that's for her, and she knows it's for her, and like, she has a great time when we do some signings and stuff, and. Yeah. You know, she knows, and she's still, you know, it's been published now 2 years, and she still reads it, and like, you know, I can tell she's proud of it. But that's, to me, again, when you do something with passion and love, again, you're never going to lose.
Right.
That was done out of passion and love for my kid, and I was like.
What would you say, just out of curiosity, because, like, you know, I admire your work and everything. What would you say is, like, a film that changed you? Like, when you were a kid, you saw a film, and you were like, you know, this is what makes me want to be in the movies. This is what wants to make me produce. This is what wants to make me write.
And a great question, Anthony. And there's so many, but I don't want to say the cliche thing, but when you're, you know, my parents coming from Italy, they came from a small little town called Pietra Pertosa. I'm going to give them a plug, as it's a beautiful town in the city of Potenza. And people always ask me, well, what kind of Italian, you know, where's your parents from? I'm like, well, it's Basilicata. The region is Basilicata, and they go, where is that? I'm going, it's kind of like near Salerno, near Naples. So I always felt like it was a very authentic part of that. So to me, you know, having that authenticity, I grew up Italian-American, but also, you know, raised by parents that came here as immigrants, busted their ass, and, you know, thankful for everything they've given me as a child. I had an amazing childhood in this neighborhood. I mean, it was the most amazing time to grow up. But growing up and being Italian and being Italian-American and watching Italian-American culture in movies like The Godfather, but those are works of art.
Yeah.
You know, movies like, of course, The Godfather and guys like Al Pacino and Robert De Niro, Dustin Hoffman, you know, even as I got older, even guys like Matt Dillon as, you know, kind of that tough guy.
Absolutely.
You know, the outsider, like, you know, movies like that. I don't know if it's like a certain movie that changed me, but when I saw that, I was like, and even when I watched television, like, even to go back to the days of like Dallas and like Dynasty and like, you know, the sitcoms, The Honeymooners, Jackie Gleason, and, you know, watching now my parents.
Ralph.
Like, Ralph.
As my father would say, yeah. I would say it's more of a TV, thing. Like, when I saw Gleason, I was like, I want to do that. Like, I want to like make people laugh. And I was a class clown, but somehow I reared into more dramatic. I just, you know, again, it looks larger than life when you're a kid and you're like, wow. But I always, again, believed in myself. But also, you know, I tell people now, because, again, they don't teach you this in school. And I only learned this in, like, the last 15 years. The mind is the most powerful thing.
Like, yeah.
You become what you think about. I was thinking about that as a kid. I was like, I want to make movies. I want to be an actor. But you don't have to know how to do something. Like, I didn't know how to write a kid's book, but I believed I was going to write a kid. That was an idea. I was in Greece. I was going by a marina. I was like, oh, Athena. And I'm like, my daughter. I'm like, I didn't know anything about writing a kid's book. I'm like, you know, I'm going to write a kid's book one day. I'm like, I believed it. And just it would come to you, right? Because you believed it.
And you just got keep a film coming out soon too, right? That one that was just wrapped?
Yeah. Yeah. Jersey Bread. And Jersey Chris, Bread. Who you had on your previous podcast, Chris Momondo, directed a movie called Judge No Book, which wrapped in February, and that's coming out, and a movie called Jersey Bread. A gentleman by the name of Greg Russo, who wrote and directed that, which is going to be a fun little twist on the crime drama genre that takes place in Jersey. And just developing a few things. I want to get behind the camera more. You know, I directed a short film called Bricklayer's Poet with Catherine Arducci and Joe Maruzzo. He wrote the play. It was based on a play he did like 30 years ago wanted to get my feet wet as a director, so I started kind of like baby steps, as I always do. You know, directed this 20-minute short film called Bricklayer's Poet, which is just a beautiful story about... I shot here in Bayside.
Oh.
I shot here in Bayside a couple of years back. Wanted to get my feet wet, storytelling. It's a beautiful, you know, film. And I'm going to get that feature under my belt. I just don't know what it is yet. Again, but I don't have to know what it is. Just know I will direct a feature eventually one day. And shifting gears into kind of like, you know, more production, commercial work, so shooting and producing, you know, producing commercials with my producing partner, Carmine Famigletti, who, again, we, you know, grew up on the same block. So I can, you know, keep it.
We got a sneak preview of some great stuff. I mean, it's funny. It's like you look at your body of work. You say, wow, what a chameleon. The fact that you can adapt to so many different roles and different styles of, you know, from comedy to acting to writing and directing. It's, you know, and I know you don't like to put all these labels on it.
Right.
But, you know, you really are such a dynamic artist.
Thank you, Sal. You know. And you're an incredible artist yourself. I mean, your voice is, I mean, there's a reason to call you Sal the Voice. I mean.
Salesman to corporate lion to proving yourself in Hollywood and proving yourself in film. To fatherhood, I know the answer, but what's been your favorite role? What's been your favorite season of life?
Being a father. I mean, that's the, you know, first and foremost. I mean, I say it, and I know, again, some people may, you know, do the cliche thing, you know, the biggest role in my life is being a father, but it is. Because, you know, everybody's dealing with their struggles, especially in this day and age, right? Everyone's got their, you don't know somebody's story, right? You know, again, hence Judge No Book, right? The movie that I did with Chris. You know, people are quick to judge a book by its cover, right? So there's a lot of, I don't know what you call it, craziness, or just the world is evolving and changing by the second or the millisecond. It's not even by the day anymore. It's changing and changing. So having, being a father and having, and seeing the innocence of a kid and having that kid is therapeutic to your soul. And like, it's just most beautiful. I feel the best thing, again, the best thing that ever happened is being a dad. You know, that's the biggest role for me, really. Mm-hmm. Nothing else. To me, like, you know.
So Gino, I wanted to ask you, you're a father now.
Yes.
You know, you, growing up, you had a lot of pressure, even if it wasn't spoken pressure. You had a lot of pressure to hit certain achievements, to kind of reach certain, grab certain rings. And then, once you've built enough confidence that, you know, you're set, you have your backup plan, or you have, you know, a good foundation, then go and chase your dreams. Is fatherhood different because of that experience? Are you taking a different approach towards Athena's interests and hopes and dreams than maybe your parents did?
So, again, my dad... He would smile when he saw me in a movie or like came to a premiere. He was at the big fan premiere when the movie came out. Like, again, but he didn't get the business of it. And we joked around about it earlier about the whole you. But I work any day, you know, work any day. Like, I get it. A quick little story about when my dad passed. He passed in March. When my dad passed, I had put myself on tape for a movie. I didn't even really think about it. I did the audition. You know, he was in and out of the hospital. I was auditioning at home, and I do this audition, and I forgot the name of the character, and I just submitted it, gave it to my manager and agent. They threw it in the pot of, like, you know, again, you throw it out there, you do an audition. I didn't think anything of it. So my father passes, and I think it was like, I don't know if it was the next day or 2 days after, and I get a phone call from my manager and says, you know that movie you went in for like a month ago? And I'm like, because movies take a lot longer than TV. TV moves pretty quickly. You know that, you know, movie you went in for? I'm like, oh, the one where I just kind of like, you know, did the audition, just said, we'll see what happens. Like, it was a couple of quick scenes. It wasn't like, you know, like deep stuff. I was playing like, like a super of a building or whatever, but you know, like a fun, a very New York movie. And I'm like, I didn't think anything of it. And I didn't think anything of the name either. So I get the call. He goes, you know, you're up for it. I'm like, oh, really? Like, you're the director's, like, it was a female director. You're the director's first choice. I'm like, oh, cool. I didn't think anything of it. They're like, we're probably going to close in on it, and, you know, you're going to get it. And I go, oh, send me the specs. So I get the email. The name of the character, you ready? Tony. Wow. They called my father Tony. My father's name is Antonio. They called him Tony on the job all the time. I was like, okay. All right, Dad. You didn't get it when you kind of got it and didn't get it when you were alive. You're sending a message like, keep on doing your thing. I was like, because I almost didn't want to do it. But then when I found out the guy's name was Tony, and I'm like, of course I'm going to do the movie. I would do the movie regardless because I just like to keep, you know, moving the needle.
Right.
But I was like,
it's a good role. You can lend your experience.
I was like, of course I'm going to do the movie. It's my father's name. I'm like, he's sending me a message like, okay, I may not have gotten what you were doing as the actor. And he would smile at what he seen, but of course he wanted to see me more. Like, it's because being an actor is not a stable, you know, job, or being a creative is not always a stable job, right? Unless you hit your mark and you're really
reaching,
like,
to the choir.
Right. So to me, it was like a message. So to circle back, I didn't have that guidance from my parents because they were immigrants from Italy, and they came here and they were like, you got to go to school. And that happens 99% of the time in the Italian culture with Italian, you know, kids, and their parents want you to just like not, I don't say struggle, like work, like really like work.
They don't want you to have to work.
Struggle, like work as hard and be like. So when I got that message from my dad, I was like, obviously he knows, you know, I know he respects. I see him smiling. He's like, you know, you keep doing your thing. It, you know, it wasn't the same as like me being, you know, in the union or working with my hands and being on my knees, but you're doing your thing. So I always looked at it, even with my daughter. My daughter goes from like loving princesses to like loving horror movies, which is crazy. And my daughter's mom is like, yeah, she's watching like all these movies, like horror movies and Chucky and Friday the 13th and it, the, you know, Pennywise the Clown. I'm like, but when I was a kid, I would like sneak into movies to go see Poltergeist and this movie and that movie. So I'm like, all right, she loves movies and stuff.
Yeah.
So I embrace it. But I also say, of course, I never got, you can be whatever you want in this world.
Yeah.
Which I wanted to hear from my parents, yeah. But they weren't built like that. They always meant well and put food on the table and, you know, wanted the best for you. But because I didn't get that, of course, you're going to pass it on to your kids. So I'm like, I tell my daughter all the time, you could do whatever you want. So I recently asked her again, what do you want to do? I want to be an artist. I want to paint. I go, you could do whatever you want. Of course, at 10, she may know what she wants to do. And she may change her mind another dozen times. But no.
She may change her mind 2 years into college.
Right, exactly. And you know what? She could be in the pharmacy program and then not like it and then take a business degree and be like, you know what? But I may say, you may want to rethink the, if you want to be an actor, it might be a little different. But hey, I don't know. You may be an influencer, which is just as big now as wanting to be an actor. But you also have, again, we were talking about when we were not rolling, the backup plan. I would have friends and family always tell me that all the time. And I didn't, I know Schwarzenegger says it and a lot of people say it, don't have the backup plan because this is what you want to do. Yeah. No, if there is a backup plan, you'll figure it out, right? So, but don't say it. There is a backup plan, because if you're saying there's a backup plan, then you're not going to go full force.
You're banking on it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What I love about your story more than anything is, like, you know, what I heard when you were talking about your parents and your dad and, you know, Italian immigrants coming here. You start with Italian immigrants come to this country, give you a better life. Then son, you, acts in The Irishman. Like, you know what I mean? You're alongside Joe Pesci. You're alongside Al Pacino. You know, that's the story of the American dream in a nutshell.
It is the American dream, but the average person will probably say, well, you were in and out of that movie. Like, quick.
To me, it's still...
But they go, you were in and out, but you didn't even have any lines. But wait, hold on a second. You don't know the backstory of... Like, people don't know the backstory of getting that.
What's the backstory?
Well, no, the backstory is auditioning for 3 months, being up for 3 different roles. Then the casting director, Ellen Lewis, who I love, said, Marty loves him. Like, if Martin Scorsese is casting a movie and it's based on a real person, whether there's lines or no lines, he looks at the tape, he looks at that. He casts based on, you know, talent also, not because you know, like, oh, well, you know, he's not going to say anything. And, like, you know, he'll look at the tape, even if, like, you don't have any lines. So the last time I heard that I was going to be actually in the film was the last stuff was, well, he's going to be working for 5 days. He's playing the mayor for Philadelphia. He's going to be waving to the crowd. He's going to have, like, a little, you know, a little photo op with De Niro. And he's going to be on the dais with Al Pacino and Robert De Niro. I'm like, I don't care if I have any lines. It's a Martin Scorsese movie. What are you talking about? Like, I've watched 100%. People. I've seen
standing
people.
In between De Niro and Pacino.
I'm like, come on. I get the process.
Yeah.
And I had to audition for a couple of roles and a couple of, like, and wait for a couple of months. But so when they came back with it, I'm like, 5 days? Well, it turns out 5 days turned into 2 weeks. And 2 weeks turned into hanging out on the set and building relationships. But to the average audience member, it may seem like, oh, I'm in and out. Oh, yeah, I wave to the crowd. Oh, I'm the mayor of Philadelphia, Mayor Frank Rizzo. And I look like this big balloon head because I was a little overweight at the time. Because Frank Rizzo was like 6'1". I'm 5'9", 5'10", on a good day. I'm like, well, I'll get a little more chunky, and I'll have the sideburns, and I'll, like, just look a little different. And I totally don't look like I did in that movie. And I'm waving to the crowd, and I do the photo op with De Niro. And that's that. But that was 2 weeks on a set. And that was 3 months of auditioning. And that was putting myself on tape after reading the book and sending it to my agent to send to the casting director.
What matters is that you had the experience, that you've done the thing, and now the thing is going to live forever. You are forever in a Scorsese movie with De Niro, with Pacino. Your name is in the same set of credits.
Wow, when you really paint the picture like that, Sal, it becomes more vivid, right? It's like right there. I'm like, yes. It's like my last day on The Irishman.
Yeah,
I got to pinch myself. It wasn't dirt. I was like, oh, this is great, this is awesome. But it was work. It was like, just go and don't be, you know, like, don't be the pest or whatever. Just watch and learn, because I love just watching and learning from, you know, people's behavior. But at the last day that I worked on that movie, I pinched myself. I was like, holy shit. Like, I'm like, and Pacino's there with his earphones, and he's walking around, he's listening to music, and he's shaking everyone's hand. I'll always remember, he always had soft hands. He's like, well, I don't want to say past, like, but when we filmed, he's got soft hands. And he was, you know, joking around with everybody and stuff. So at that last day, I'm like, oh shit. I'm like, yeah. I'm like, wow. I'm like, yeah. When I found that out, I'm like, even though I didn't have any lines, I was like jumping through the roof.
Yeah,
I was calling friends, going, I'm going to be in a Scorsese movie. And I'm like, but I don't have any lines, but I don't care. It's like Mayor Frank Rizzo from Philadelphia. It's a real guy. And I'm like, Marty liked my tape. And I'm like, oh, shit. It all came. And like, yeah, it when you paint it like that, Sal, yes. Because as a little boy, that's how I looked at that last day.
Listen, Gino got you're right. It is
sometimes it is a little bit.
Gino Caffarelli, author, actor, writer, producer, director, restaurateur, sommelier. the sky's the limit with you, pal. I mean, really, thank you, thank
Sal,
you, for
thank you,
us
Anthony,
time.
thank you, really,
thank you.
This has been beautiful. You know, thank you so much, for real.